This is Whitley Strieber. It's Dreamland. At the edge of reality, there lies an unknown country, a realm of mirrors and truths and the unexpected. If you dare not travel in this country, then we urge you, turn off your radio now. But if you hunger for high adventure and information that others dare not entertain, then welcome to Dreamland. Tonight, one of the legendary figures of the modern age, José Arguelles, will be with us. The man who started the harmonic convergence. The man who discovered the importance of 2012. An incredible individual. In his new book, Time and the Technosphere, he writes this. 911, the twin towers of the World Trade Center gone in the veritable twinkle of an eye. Tragedy, horror, terrorism. The whole world brought to a halt. The aftermath, patriotism, war, and an all-pervading uneasy feeling. What happened? What really happened? Was this the beginning of the apocalypse? Tonight, we will find out from José Arguelles. But before he comes on the air, Linda Moulton Howe is going to be talking to us about the shaft in the Cheops Pyramid. We went into it last week on live television, got through that door that hadn't been entered in 4,000 years, and what did we find? Another door. It was almost a joke. But Linda's got something new she's going to be talking about. I think it's going to be very, very fascinating. Very fascinating. When we're talking to José Arguelles, we're going to be talking about a whole new kind of calendar. For example, today is September the 21st, but not in this calendar. Very ancient and very new. It's the Mayan calendar. It is an extraordinary, perfect calendar. 365 days divided into 13 moons of 28 days each. For example, today is the 21st. But in the 13-moon calendar, this is day 2 of moon 3, called Electric Moon Day 2. Each day has got a solar seal, a tone, and a 13-moon calendar date. The solar sea of today is World Bridger. The tone of the day is lunar, or tone 2. We're going to find out a lot more about this from José as we go into this in the course of the evening. It's going to be, I think, an extraordinary experience, because what he's saying basically is that time and the calendars that we choose to use are related, and that we can become fourth-dimensional beings by using another kind of calendar. And boy, does he make a fascinating case for this in Time and the Technosphere. José hasn't written a book in a long time. I remember back during the years of the, I guess in 1987, the harmonic convergence. It was a powerful thing. The media picked up on it, and it swept the world. I participated in it, and I noticed that things changed after the harmonic convergence. It wasn't the same anymore. There were a lot of changes in the world, and José will be talking to us about just what those changes are and what they've meant, and also about 911, which plays a huge role in this book. What is 911 really all about? What actually happened? Why does José consider it such a hugely important event? Well, we're going to find all of this out tonight, so get set for a really extraordinary experience with José Arguelles, one of the legendary figures of this age, on Dreamland. This is with you. This is going to be one of the most amazing interviews we've ever had on this radio program, and I'm now very happy and excited to welcome José Arguelles to this program. I have wanted to talk to him since the Harmonic Convergence, which was an awesome event that he brought into our world. Jose has, after 15 years, written a new book called Time in the Technosphere, and it is another mind-bender. He works full-time now on behalf of the World 13-Moon Calendar Change Peace Movement and is president of the Foundation for the Law of Time. And, you know, before I started reading this book, I didn't know what the law of time was, and I bet you don't either, but you're going to find out. He's the author of numerous books, including The Mayan Factor, Earth Ascending, Surfers of the Zuvuya, and he lives right now in Oregon. This is, usually I go into a break right now, but now we have Jose with us, and so, hi, Jose. How are you?
Hey, is that you, Whitley?
This is me, Jose. Hi.
We didn't talk before, huh? Did we have some correspondence once?
Yeah, I think we did. I think we actually talked.
Yeah, I think we did sometime in the early 90s.
Yeah.
I have some vague recollection of that.
Me too, but I don't know what we talked about.
Yeah, me neither. Yeah. Here we are now.
Right. Well, this is so exciting. I have read this book from cover to cover, and I would like you to tell us a little bit about what the Harmonic Convergence was and how you have, we'll get into the year 2012, which has become almost like a subtext of the whole culture at this point. It's a hugely important number in a lot of people's minds, and you brought that number into our minds. So start by telling us a little bit about what the Harmonic Convergence was.
Yeah, the Harmonic Convergence was a prophetic flashpoint. It grew out of a long time of study and out of some information I had originally received in 1970 from a man who's recently passed, a guy named Tony Shearer. And this was an ancient Mexican prophecy, the prophecy of the 13 heavens and the 9 hells. And each of those heavens and each of those hells is a 52-year cycle. And the last of these, the 9th hell, ended on August 16th, 1987. And that was supposed to be, as I said, the prophetic flashpoint. It was to announce to the world that we had better get our act together because 25 years down the road, it was going to be 2012, the end of the whole cycle of history, according to the Mayan long count and the Mayan calendar. So the Harmonic Convergence, I had steamed and brewed on that for a long time. And as a matter of fact, it was in 1983, because I sat with that information for 16 years or something. In 1983, it finally came to me. We had to have a big ceremony, a global peace meditation around the world on the morning of August 16th of 1987. And we had to get people in resonance with the earth and in resonance with themselves to start sending a signal around the planet that the time had come to be ready for the big changes, and the time had come to be ready to enter into an era of peace and harmony. What was amazing is that people actually heard that call. When I first started putting out that call, I thought, oh my God, how's everyone going to hear this? I'm carrying this prophecy, and I'm supposed to tell everybody in the world about it. And I remember it was 1984 that I knew it was supposed to be called the Harmonic Convergence, because I knew everything was supposed to harmonically converge and that we were supposed to harmonically converge into a state of harmony and peace. Well, it was obviously, you know, meant to happen. It was some kind of wake-up call in the DNA of a lot of people around the world. I've been everywhere around the world, and everywhere I go, people say, you know, that Harmonic Convergence, everything changed in my life after that. And a lot of people, they started going off and doing new things and started to explore themselves or started to wake up more to nature. But the real point of it was to get people together and to send out the message, we have to get back in resonance with the earth. We have to return to living in harmony with ourselves and with the earth, because come 2012, the cycle is going to close. And when the cycle closes, that means that we will have to have gotten to a place where we're saying to each other, hey, what lessons did we learn?
Yeah. Jose, I want to ask you a little bit about the energy of the Harmonic Convergence, which has become a huge event worldwide. I participated, Ann and I participated in the Harmonic Convergence at the Mohonk Mountain House in New Paltz, New York. And there were events going on all over the planet. Now, there must have been something extremely, in fact, after having read this book, I know there was, a very powerful and profound energy involved. Now, you state the midpoint of the second 20-year, 8-year cycle is the Harmonic Convergence of August the 16th, 17th, 1987, exactly 14 years after the dedication of the World Trade Center and 14 years before the inevitable moment of its destruction. Now, what are you wired into, guy? Jeez, I mean, what is going on here?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you something, Whitley. I'm wired.
Yeah, I know you're wired.
And what I'm wired through is, among other things, is what we call the synchronic pattern of time. This is the higher fourth dimensional level of time. And
I don't want to keep stopping you, and I won't do this again. But during the course of this program, you're going to learn about how to live on this level of time and how to make this calendar work for you. It's going to be incredible. Go ahead.
Yeah, so as I said, I seem to be wired into this synchronic pattern of time. That's the fourth dimensional time that exists all the time. When people have some kind of flash of synchronicity, that's fourth dimensional time that's happening. They pop out of the causal and into the fourth dimension. And this fourth dimensional order of time, synchronicity, is the natural order. We humans have a hard time with it because we've become conditioned and accustomed to irregular and mechanical time, so it's kind of weird for some people when they have synchronicity. But this synchronic pattern, that's what the ancient Maya, that was for how they were living. And they were living that at a very high level because they understood the mathematics of the timing frequencies that govern that governs the whole universe. Part of my interesting life and destiny was to be kind of like a trip switch for this to begin to happen again. I knew from the Harmonic Convergence that we were, it's like when you have a big stone or something in a pond and then it ripples out. And the 1987, that August 16th and 17th was when we were coming across one of those big ripples. It was a synchronic ripple, so like people heard the call, they could feel it coming. It was like a subduction zone when the tide comes in, so they went for it. They went for it everywhere, and then the tide goes out, and you get to another kind of plateau. Well, we're coming into another ripple when we get to 2004. We'll talk about that later too. I know that, but basically, I found out from the time I was 14 that I was wired into this higher synchronic pattern, and I started noting more and more as my life went on that I seemed to be wired to something very, very different, and that kind of marked me out, and lots of times I didn't know what to do about it or what to do with it, but I kept plugging and overcame lots of obstacles, and then I finally realized, well, I see what it is. I'm really plugged into this synchronic pattern of the Mayan time wave and of the Mayan prophecies, and I'm like a charged chip.
Well, listen, I want to mention, by the way, our science reporter and Linda Moulton Howe is still with us. And Linda, have you got anything any burning questions just now for Jose?
Well, in listening, and hello, Jose.
Hi, we
met and talked in Boulder
way back when.
Yeah. I was in Medjugorje in then Yugoslavia on that August 16th to the 17th, and you were talking about synchronicity, and I had no plan of being there. It was as if some greater plan picked me up and plunked me there. It's way too long to explain, but that is where I ended up on August 16, 1987, with no prior itinerary or plan. And that was where the alleged Virgin Mary was appearing in the rectory to the children in Medjugorje with prophecies of things to come. And one of them had to do with the end of communism and with great changes in Europe. And 2 years later, the Berlin Wall was down, and not too long, we had a complete change from the Soviet Union to Russia. And I've always linked the harmonic convergence to that kind of anticipation that everyone was talking about then.
Yeah, that's really absolutely true, Linda. As a matter of fact, in the first half of 1990, after the Berlin Wall came down, there are a lot of newspaper stories, even newspaper editorials, that were linking the end of the Cold War with the harmonic convergence. There was a big...
Yeah.
There was a big story in the Washington Post, I think about May 4th or 5th, about that whole thing. And then I remember when Gorbachev came to the United States in June of 1990 on the Dan Rather CBS Evening News. They opened a story on Gorbachev in San Francisco by showing a picture of people at the harmonic convergence with a big earth ball. And they said back then people were laughing at it, but look now. Gorbachev's there, and he's more popular than Bush. The harmonic convergence worked.
Well, it's. I think it did work. I have always thought it worked because I've watched the world change after the harmonic convergence in absolutely amazing ways. But now things are getting a little bit darker. And after we cross the top of the hour, I think Linda's going to stay with us. Certainly, we'd love to have you if you'd like to, Linda. And Jose and Linda and I are going to get into what the technosphere is, what the problem is. Why is it getting so dark around here? This is Whitley Strieber. It's Dreamland. We'll be right back. This is Whitley. We're back. We've been talking to Jose Arguelles, author of The Mayan Factor and the new book, Time and the Technosphere, The Law of Time in Human Affairs. It's really a world beater, this book. It is, I have read it all, and I have found that not only is my mind expanded by it, but it offers the potential for really profound increase in consciousness. You can learn to live in a state of synchronicity. Jose is wired into something very powerful, and this is important stuff. So listen close and learn from him, as I will be doing during the course of the evening. You can get the book from unknowncountry.com. Click on Dreamland, click on the story, and you can get it. It's right there. Well worth having. Well worth having. Oh, incidentally, I'd like to thank so many people who have bought my new book, The Path, which is also on the website. It's not really available in stores, just on the website, and that's the way I like to do this with these, the key and now the path. They told me that it has been sold copies on every continent in the world except Antarctica. So my question is, was there nobody in Antarctica who wants to be on the path? This is Whitley Strieber. It's Dreamland. And we'll be on the path with Jose Arguelles in just a moment. We'll be right back. This is Whitley Strieber. It's Dreamland. We're back with Jose, and Linda Moulton Howe is still with us. Jose, we were just beginning to talk about the relationship between what's happening now and what was happening back 15 years ago, and why it is that you are kind of on track with something. Because when I first heard about the harmonic convergence and read The Mayan Factor and began thinking in terms of 2012, I thought to myself, is he right? But, you know, now we're down the road a little bit, and you're still on track. I'm impressed, frankly.
Yeah, well,
I'm a little scared.
Yeah, I never left track.
You didn't, but the rest of us
the
were
rest
not even
of you did, yeah, you know,
track.
You know, I saw that. I saw that, like, where we left off, you know, when the high point was when Dan Rather was talking about the harmonic convergence in Gorbachev and world peace. Well, then everything got derailed about 2 months after that. And 2 months after that happened, that was Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait. But just before he did that, there was something else that happened, and that was the first covert meeting of the G7, the Group of Seven. The Group of Seven had been meeting, the first overt meeting of them. They had been meeting covertly for 15 years since they were formed in 1974.
And now, what is the Group of Seven? Let's just
The Group of Seven is the. It was formed in 1974 in the CIA when George Bush Sr. was the head of the CIA there, and it was a cartel of the finance ministers of the seven most industrialized countries in the world: United States of America, Canada, United Kingdom, France, Italy, Germany, and Japan. And they had been meeting, they had been, you know, waiting for the Cold War to end. And when it ended, they had their first public meeting. It was the 16th meeting they had. And about 2 weeks after they had that meeting, Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait. The G7 became more prominent through the 1990s. They actually were the policy makers of the world. That is the world government. And they're behind the GATT, the GATT, the WTO. All of that, everything that happened in the 90s and the turn toward what we call monetary politics, all that policy was set by the G7. The G7 has been setting world policy since 1990. And Russia's gotten in there recently. They've begged their way in, and so they say now G7, sometimes G8. But that's also... you'll find that when it talks in Book of Revelation, chapter 13, about the beast with seven heads.
Oh, my.
That comes around. That's your G7 there.
And that's a subtext of your book that's really awesome, and one that I want to talk about, because you don't actually quote very much from the Book of Revelation in Time and the Technosphere, but it's certainly... is implicit in a lot of what you've written.
Yeah, it's definitely there. I first became aware of it in the Mayan Factor, and then in the 90s I became very aware of it in 1993. I watched all this happening. I saw that what happened was the turn went to very, very hard monetary materialism.
Right.
And then the harmonic convergence got deleted. You won't find any mention of the harmonic convergence in any of the news stories about the top things that happened in the 20th century. I looked at the magazines, nothing there. It's like, forget that.
Yeah, right.
Okay. And,
yeah, well, that was just, for them, it was just a media event.
Yeah, exactly.
They only surf this surface.
Yeah. But I started becoming acutely aware of the Book of Revelations in the 90s. I was very aware of the 144,000 from the harmonic convergence that occurs in chapter 7, verse 4, and then again in chapter 14. Right after the talks about the chapter 13 talks about the beast with seven heads, chapter 12 starts off with the image of the woman with her crowned with 12 stars and then with her feet on the moon. And then most versions of the Bible will tell you she was exiled for 1,260 days. And then the next chapter comes up with the beast with seven heads, chapter 13. Now, chapter 13 corresponds to the Mayan calendar. There's 13 baktuns that marked the whole course of history. We've been in the 13th baktun from 1618 to 2012. That's the baktun of materialism. So that 13th chapter, when it talks about the beast with seven heads, that's the final phase of the 13th baktun. That's the final phase of the whole cycle of history. So And then you get done with that, which is a pretty horrific thing. And then you get to chapter 14, the end of chapter 13 is when it says that the beast with seven heads will put its mark on everyone's forehead. That's the famous 666, all that type of thing.
Right.
And then immediately you hit chapter 14 and it says everyone will have that mark except for the 144,000 who will be dancing to a new song. New tune in town.
This is where we all want to be.
Yeah.
Okay, Jose. And that's going to help us get there, right?
Yeah, so that's the track. So, like I said, when we were in that harmonic convergence, it said we got 25 years to close the cycle. We'll be able to close the cycle properly if we return to living in the cycles of nature. So that's the rub.
That's the hard thing.
Yeah, that's
to find the cycles of nature, because we've gone almost blind to them. Linda, before we go on, I recall you once telling me about a remarkable experience you had on Patmos at the place where the Book of Revelation was handed down to John.
Yes, that's true. In my life. Every once in a while, if I touch stone especially, I get images sometimes of things that have happened there, or at least that's the way I interpret it. And that was really extraordinary, because I had placed my hand inside of one of the holes carved in that cave that they have on the island of Patmos, allegedly where John, who wrote Revelations, stayed when he was doing that work. And I did not know what the holes in the wall in the cave were. The tour guide had been in there before me, and most everybody had left, and I was there by myself. And so I had placed a hand in one of those holes, and I had this strong image of this man on his knees really crying out. And I don't know exactly how all of that works, except that perhaps stone, like a crystal of some sort, retains frequencies through time. That's the best I can offer. It was just really something to have felt what it seemed to me extreme emotion there in that cave where John allegedly had been. And I wondered, Jose, who the woman was that you were mentioning, who was exiled for the 1,260 days.
Well, the woman represents the soul of the world. The woman represents the soul of the world, the psyche of the world. The 1,260 days represents the exile in materialism. What I've discovered was that in terms of the law of time, and by my staying on track after the harmonic convergence, I knew I was supposed to finished decoding the mathematics of the Mayan calendar, and that took me to a point on December 10th of 1989, just before the end of the Cold War, where my wife and I were in the Museum of Time in Geneva, Switzerland, and we had been already living on the Mayan timing cycles, 13-day cycles, 20-day cycles, 52-day cycles. And we were in this museum, and we, for a couple hours, and we looked at each other and said, hey, they got to rename this museum. This is the Museum of Mechanical Time. Mechanical time's not time. It's a mechanized fiction of what real time is about. And we, at that moment, I had a very strong realization that mechanical time is a frequency, which I describe as the 1260 frequency, an irregular 12-month calendar and 60-minute mechanical hour. And this is something that actually was devised by the Babylonians, believe it or not, and it was inherited, finally transmitted through the Vatican and through the invention of the mechanical clock. And I saw also from my study of the mathematics of the Mayan calendar that there is a natural timing frequency, which I describe as mathematically as a ratio constant 13 to 20, which was encoded in the Mayan calendar. And I understood then why the Mayan calendar was running these 13 and 20-day cycles, because this is the natural galactic frequency. So from that, my work developed very fast and in a direction which I never perceived it was going to go. But I saw then that this 1260 frequency represents the frequency of artificial mechanical time. The 13th Bakhtun, which began in 1618, was the moment in which the whole world got, as it were, captured by this frequency. The Gregorian calendar reform, as it's called, was completed in 1582, 20
right.
years 20 years after all the Mayan time knowledge was destroyed in an Ato da Fe in Izamal, Yucatan, and at the same time that the mechanical clock was perfected, so that 1618, when this last Bakhtun cycle began, the world was, as the Europeans had circumnavigated the world, they had virtually taken control of the North and South America, and most of the planet was pretty well falling into European hands at that point. And so the 1260 frequency, it's a mental, unconscious mental frequency conditioned by these timing, what I call the macro program of the calendar and the micro program of the clock. That the mental frequency of the planet was then captured by the 1260, and that's what that means. This woman with the 12 stars around her head and her feet on the moon. Okay,
mm-hmm. She's in effect crushing the moon.
Yeah,
the old calendar.
Yeah, and that she's and so then she's driven into exile. She actually represents the world soul, because then. And that 1260 days refers to this 1260 timing frequency, because the whole world's been captured by this. It's a hypnotic spell.
I want to ask you, on behalf of a listener, if you know anything about the Cross of Hende.
The Cross of Hende.
In France, yeah.
I don't think so.
Well, it's interesting. I will make this then an aside. A listener asked if you could comment on it, if you knew, but there are a group of people who believe that tomorrow, actually, September the 22nd, 2002, is an important end of time indicator, as pointed out by this cross, by the Cross of Hende. And, it'll be interesting to see if there's anything in it, if there anything extraordinary happens tomorrow that we shall see.
Yeah,
go ahead. Jose, that's just an aside.
Yeah.
I don't want to dwell on it if you're not familiar with
yeah.
it.
Yeah. No. Anyway, I saw that 1260 that also occurs in the 11th chapter, that number 1260 days. It talks about the two prophets in exile, and they're exiled for 1260 days. Well, I saw that 1260 that actually referred to the 1260 timing frequency, which is an 12 months 60 minute hour, and that's based actually goes all the way back to Egypt and Babylonia. It's based on this concept of when you look at any clock, a traditional clock or a watch, you'll see what you're looking at is a circle divided into 12 parts.
Right.
Okay. That's not time.
No, it isn't. It's a circle divided into 12 parts.
It's a circle divided into 12 parts with a mechanical hand going around, okay? And every time you look at it, you deprive yourself of your telepathy.
Now, it looks as if we come up with this particular way of looking at time, of viewing time, and history begins.
Exactly.
That is what happened, isn't it?
That's exactly what happened.
Who gave us this? How did we come up with this?
That's an interesting thing there, Whitley. You know, that concept of the 60-minute hour and the 12 and the 24, that is right there at the 3000 B.C., at the beginning of history. It's interesting that the Mayan long count begins at 3113, that just to encompass that. And actually, that long con exists to kind of track this whole Babylonian scheme. Where that came from is very.
Now, wait, Jose. It exists to kind of track this whole Babylonian scheme.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What are you saying about the knowledge of the Maya here?
Well, the knowledge of the Maya is a galactic knowledge. That means to say, it's from a galactic perspective, a perspective that sees. The solar system is an entire entity that with its planetary system, it's not geocentric point of view, it's not even heliocentric. It's looking at it from a outside even of the solar system here, a galactic point of view. And that knowledge, that galactic knowledge, was enshrined in the classic Mayan civilization through the time knowledge of the many different calendars that they used. They knew time as a factor of synchronization. It has nothing to do with the circle divided into 12 parts.
Right.
Jose, do you think that solar system point of view was transferred to the Mesopotamian region by non-humans?
It's very possible. If you take entities and intelligences living on Saturn and Jupiter as being non-human, because that's where that came from.
Now, why do you say that?
Because this Jupiter and the Saturn, they have a relationship to each other that has 12 and 60 year cycle. And that also, when you look at where Jupiter and Saturn are in the solar system, you see there's something very interesting. You have the point of the five inner planets, if you include the asteroid belt, which was a planet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then you have the five outer planets. That's Jupiter and Saturn. And the destruction of that asteroid belt, which was known as the planet Maldek, was a factor that was involved with the entities, say, on Jupiter and Saturn.
Who called it Maldek?
Well, that's an interesting thing. That came to me in the 1980s, and it seemed to be very mysterious, and it rang very many bells with me, and I think we're dealing with interplanetary memories.
Okay, we are going to deal with other kinds of memories in just a couple of minutes. This is Whitley Strieber. It's Dreamland. We'll be right back. And this is Whitley Strieber on the Premier Radio Networks. We have been talking to Jose Argilis, Time and the Technosphere, The Law of Time in Human Affairs. Amazing book, amazing guy. The book is available from unknowncountry.com or by clicking on tonight's Dreamland or going to the store. And I think you will find, as obvious from listening to Jose, that this is really well worth having. We're going to get into some of the practical aspects of it later on, because Jose, it makes the point, and I think he's making a real point here, that the way the mind handles time is a huge part of what dimension we live in, where we are dimensionally. And he's going to show us a new way of living in time that we shall see. Will it change us? It very well might. The Cross of Hendaye, I mentioned this, by the way, during the course of the conversation with Jose, and for those of you who are curious about what I was talking about, I'll elaborate on it a little bit. On Unknown Country, under the Mind Frame tab, on the right-hand side of the page, you will find an Other Websites section. Click on this and go to Ancient Wisdom. I think, and I may not be right about this, but a site called sangral.com is the second or third site in the list under Ancient Wisdom. Go to this website and you can learn about the Cross of Hendaye and the Hendaye prophecy. This prophecy essentially is saying they believe that tomorrow, the day that this is the solstice, this is the autumnal equinox, and tomorrow is a day of enormous significance. And we shall see what tomorrow brings. What will the 22nd of September bring? Will it be a quiet day in the history of the world, or will it indeed be a day of enormous significance? I think that Saddam Hussein's announcement essentially that first he announced that inspectors were free to come to Iraq at any time. Then, I believe yesterday, he said No, they had to abide by the rules that were established that caused them to leave in the first place, and that they weren't actually free to go anywhere they wanted to go. Now, I believe this means war. A friend of mine who is in the a supplier for the Pentagon certainly felt like it was going to happen this month, and maybe tomorrow will be the day. We shall see, and be fascinating if it is. Keep your eyes open tomorrow and in the next few days thereafter. I think it's going to be, we live indeed in interesting times right now. Time and the technosphere, speaking of interesting times, why are they so interesting? Well, a man who knows is Jose Arguez, and he is with us. And so we're going to get right back to him in just a couple of seconds. This is Whitley Strieber. It's Dreamland. We'll be right back. This is Whitley Strieber. It's Dreamland. We're back with Jose Arguez, and Linda Howe is still with us. Jose, one of the things that's always fascinated me about the Mayan, we've had quite a few guests on this radio program who have pointed out the depth and the profundity of their knowledge and their scientific knowledge. And I've always wondered where that came from. And what do you have to say about that?
Well, where that came from, as I was speaking earlier, that's a galactic knowledge base. And when we talk about that, we're talking about, I think, interdimensional transmissions of information from what we might refer to as different star nodes or different star points. When I first met Humboldt's men, for instance, and I invited him to come to Boulder in 1985, and the first thing he...
Now, who was he?
Humboldt's men is a Mayan daykeeper, scholar, lives in Yucatan.
What is a daykeeper?
Well, someone who follows the calendar and follows the Mayan timing system.
Mm-hmm.
There's daykeepers, there's Quiche Maya daykeepers in Guatemala, and there's some in present-day Yucatan. That's a kind of a generic term, but anyone who's indigenous there following the calendar and trying to maintain those traditions is referred to as a daykeeper. Humboldt is a daykeeper. He's kind of a philosopher and many other things as well. Anyway, I had invited him to Boulder in 1985, and I remember the first thing he said was that this is the seventh star system that the Maya have been on. And so that rang bells with me in terms of understanding the perspective that they developed in their calendars and in their notions of time. So people say, well, where is that? Is that in the, like in the Pleiades? I think so. I think we can name the Pleiades, we can name Sirius, we can name Antares, we can name Arcturus, among other points where this Mayan star knowledge has had its basis. And then it has was planted then here on Earth with the specific point of providing us with a gauge of time and of events, which is totally apart from the Babylonian mainstream, which
right.
is very important, that if we did not have the Mayan frame of reference, we would all be thoroughly immersed in the Babylonian mainstream, and we would be suffocating in an unbearable apocalypse, which will be happening to some degree anyway. But we do have with the Mayan time frame what you might call the emergency exit.
Let me ask you, if we, as individuals, embrace the Mayan time frame, two questions. A, how do we do this? And B, what happens to us?
Well, the way to do it has now been made very practical because For the last 10 years, we have been living through the Mayan timing system through a simple device which is referred to as the 13-moon 28-day calendar. This is not specifically a Mayan calendar, though it was one of the 17 calendars that the Maya were using in their heyday. The Druids have this calendar, and you can still find this calendar, the Druid tree calendar, 13-moon 28-day calendar in England. You can find this calendar still being used in South America, where it has been used for 5,500 years. And my research shows that it was virtually used by virtually every people on every continent, the Polynesians, in ancient prehistoric China, prehistoric India, that this 13-moon 28-day timing device was the standard device. It's correlated with what I discovered to be the natural galactic timing frequency, the 1320 frequency. So this calendar, 13 months of 28 days each, is correlated with the 260-day cycle. And this 260-day cycle is the fourth dimensional cycle. So because it's correlated to this cycle here, it allows us to begin to live in what's called the synchronic order, where synchronicity is the norm. So it's easy to follow a calendar, much easier than the Gregorian calendar, which 30 days has September, April, June, and November. All the rest
right.
have 31, except for February, which has 28. Except for on leap years, it has 29. And on the leap year, on the centuries that are not multiples of four, don't have a leap year. So that's the Gregorian calendar.
Well, that seems simple enough, doesn't it?
Yeah.
No problem there.
So the 13 months of 28 days, every day of the week, every month is always the same. There's no, you don't get lost in that. And because it's correlated to the 260-day cycle, it creates factors of synchronization and synchronicity, which put us in tune with the natural fourth dimension time wave.
Go ahead. Yeah, please.
You were saying, Jose, that there was a great difference between what the Babylonian point of view would be versus the Mayan. In your mind, do you think that implies that there were two competing agendas by two possible non-human entities here on the planet?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm really not certain. All I know is that the Babylonian agenda has prevailed as the dominant agenda of world civilization, especially in the last 400 years, especially with the conquest of the rest of the world by the Europeans, which was financed actually by the Vatican in 400 years ago, and they were carrying on what I would call the Babylonian legacy. The Maya, as you know, were not in the old world, not in the Afro-Eurasian landmass, but were in the new world, in the between North and South America, for a long time, very remote from the Babylonians, and it would seem that was very intentional that development occurred in that part of the world. They lived in a very, from a Babylonian point of view, they lived in a very unsophisticated technological society, but a highly sophisticated mental synchronic order society, and that their purpose was to make sure that the Mayan standard, the Mayan galactic standard, was established on this planet so that when we got to this point, the end time, that we would have this other frame of reference, as I said, to give us the emergency exit, to give us the way of getting back to living in the cycles of nature, which is, you recall, where we began with the harmonic convergence. The harmonic convergence said we can all harmonically converge if we get the point that by 2012 we have to be living according to the cycles of nature. And the way we live according to the cycles of nature is you have to leave artificial Babylonian time, and you have to enter into a natural timing frequency. And the instrument to help you enter the natural timing frequency is the 13-moon, 28-day calendar. And so the point is to get the human, if we want to survive Armageddon and all the apocalypses that are in store for us, because we are literally hell-bent for destruction. We're living in Gregorian calendar cycles of 28 years. The 28-year cycle of the Twin Towers was from 1973 to 2001. The Twin Towers were dedicated in 1973. They were destroyed in 2001. 28-year cycle, go back before, and that takes you back to 1945, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. 28 years before that, it's 1917. America enters the First World War, the Russian Revolution. 28 years before that, it's 1889, and you have the first Tower of Babel or modern world. The Eiffel Tower was built then. So you see these programs repeat. If we have another 28 years to take us to 2029, then we won't have a planet. We won't have anything here. It will be gone. So we have to make this, we have to understand that we have to make this decision to leave Babylonian time. We can do that, and the opportunity to do it exists right now, and the means and the instrument to do it exists right now, and that is by living on this 13-moon, 28-day cycle and picking up the Mayan agenda. If we pick up the Mayan agenda, and you say, what will it be like? Well, it's the difference between harmony and disharmony. And we live in disharmony, and there's no way in the world we'll ever get to any kind of harmony as long as we live on timing standards that are inherently and intrinsically flawed and disharmonic.
Now, Jose, I have to ask you this question. What if we made the change and we went on the 13-moon calendar, 28 days, 13 moons were a year? Now, why would that change us? Wouldn't we simply have a different calendar?
No. Yeah, you'd have a different calendar.
Well, yeah, we would, but I mean, why would it be different?
But you have to understand that a calendar is a macro programming device.
When you say a macro programming device, mm-hmm. exactly what do you mean?
What I mean is that is the way you program your daily life. You program
right.
your daily
well,
life
yeah, we do.
You with a calendar that is marked by, like, for instance, I was listening to this ad that this is September, it's Pain Awareness Month.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. You're programmed to think that September is actually real.
Well, yeah, we are.
You are, right. That's just a program. You know,
the calendar, though, that we have reflects the seasons.
Yeah, the calendar doesn't reflect the seasons. The calendar, it starts on January 1st. That's 9, 10, 11 days after the winter.
That's true, yeah.
Solstice. There's nothing. It's an arbitrary fiction, Whitley. It was invented by Julius Caesar because he wanted to convert the Roman Republic into the Roman Empire, and they had a pretty bad calendar before that.
Yeah, they did, indeed.
And then he made this calendar, which was originally called the Julian calendar, but it doesn't make any sense. And
yep.
So, you know, like people, you say, well, what does it mean, February? Do you know what February means? It's the name of a divinatory rite based on the entrails of some weird animal. Okay.
So it's a calendar that's kind of
so,
grown up
you
over
know,
history. It's true.
Yeah, it's true. And listen, and why, you know, we think we're scientific, rational people, and we say, if you have a standard of measure, don't you expect the units to be even? What happens if you try to build a house with a standard of measure that has crooked units? You're going to build a crooked house. Well, time is our mental house, and the standard of measure that we use to construct that mental house, it creates just that kind of effect. If you have a crooked standard of measure, you're going to develop a crooked mental house, and that is why the world is run by crooks.
And yeah, and there's certainly a lot of evidence of that. Yeah. I want to get back to the Book of Revelation and woe, woe, O great city, where all who had ships on the sea became rich through her wealth. In 1 hour she has been brought to ruin. With such violence the great city of Babylon will be thrown down. Well, is not he referring to our whole world?
Well,
isn't this Babylon?
The Babylon, the center of Babylon, New York is the modern Babylon.
Right.
Okay? So as Babylon goes, so goes the world. That's why when those twin towers went on Gregorian September, Pain Awareness Month, the 11th, that when those twin towers went, they were the focal point of the world mind, as in no other event in modern history. We didn't see Hiroshima and Nagasaki on TV, but we did see the Twin Towers, which was about as impactful, if not more so, because no one could see Hiroshima and Nagasaki, but you sure could see those Twin Towers coming down. And that was an apocalyptic event. I found it very interesting that hardly anyone in the news referred to it as apocalyptic. If you go back and look at the newspapers, they didn't want to because it was. And denial is so strong, they wouldn't want to say that. But that's the center of the New York Stock Exchange. That runs the world. It was the center of the New York Port Authority. And that's
right.
So that's the center of the world. So just like Babylon was the center of ancient Mesopotamia and the old world, New York was the center of the whole world. That's the world empire right there. So that's Babylon. And it says like in 1 hour, and you read also it says that people walk around with ash in their hair. You could see that for days afterwards. So it was.
That's true.
It was as fulfilling a portent of that chapter of the fall of Babylon in the book of Revelations as you could find. And that was the signal. That was the sign. This is the beginning of the end.
Wow. Speaking of the end, we've come to the top of the hour all of a sudden. Like magic, as it often is on this program. I think to myself, I have missing time on Dreamland because I get so enthralled by some of my guests that, wow. Okay, well, we've come to the top of the hour. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes, and I'd like to say bye-bye to my terrific science reporter, Linda Moulton Howe. Her website, earthfiles.com. Keep up with the edge of science. We'll be right back. This is Whitney Strieber. We're back. We've been talking with Jose Arguias, Time and the Technosphere, the Law of Time in Human Affairs. Jose is the author of The Mayan Factor. He is the architect of the harmonic convergence and the discoverer of the importance of the year 2012. We're finding out tonight that we are right on his timeline to 2012. And we're going to find out also what that year means to him. For you to find out, you need to get Time in the Technosphere. Get it from unknowncountry.com. Go to the store. Click on tonight's Dreamland. Easy to get. It'll be on its way quickly, too. They're getting faster and faster and more efficient on that little store over there. I am looking at a couple of papers that have just been dropped into my lap, one from the Foundations of Physics, Volume 32, Number 6, called Polarizable Vacuum Approach to General Relativity by Hal Puthoff. In fact, both of these papers are by Hal Puthoff. He's a dear friend. The other, Engineering the Zero-Point Field in Polarizable Vacuum for Interstellar Flight. There is a new Whitley's Journal up. It is called The Demon Eye of Knowledge. It's on unknowncountry.com, and it talks about how essential it is for us to empower ourselves with technologies that extend the reach of mankind to the stars, and that is what Hal is all about. It is also what next week's author, Nick Cook, will be talking about with The Hunt for Zero Point. He nailed the mystery of the Nazi UFO connection, and he took that all the way up to modern times to right now, where he proves that Boeing is working on an anti-gravity craft. Of course, they've got to because, excuse me, they are under the gun. They are losing their. I think we heard in our news they've gotten rid of over 30,000 employees just this year. They desperately need something new. There was a, if you go to unknowncountry.com and put Boeing in the search engine, B-O-E-I-N-G-E, you'll get two stories. One about essentially the story from Nick Cook about what they are doing, and the other one is a denial on their part, which any company in its right mind would do, not because they want to hide this, but because they don't want their competitors to jump on it too quickly. In any case, what this all adds up to is people like Hal Putoff are putting in our hands, and Boeing, putting in our hands the technology we need to immensely increase the reach of mankind, to become a stellar species. At the same time, people like Jose are telling us we need to make certain changes in our way of being if we're going to do that. All of this is coming together, all of it pointing toward the immediate future, 2012 perhaps. But there's a lot of very positive stuff happening out there. The journal entry is, on the surface, it's a very dark journal entry. It's about some really weird things that I've had happening to me, a psychic attack, and a lot of stuff like that. But read on, because toward the end of it, it gets into just how close we are to technologies that just a few years ago we thought were impossible. We're on our way toward the speed of light. We're on our way toward the stars. Will we make it? Well, let's ask Jose. He probably knows. This is Whitley Strieber. It's Dreamland. We'll be right back. This is Whitley Strieber. It's Dreamland. We're back with Jose Arguez. Jose, we have a question on email. And you know, listeners, if you want to email Jose questions, just email them to whitley@streamer.com. They'll get right to us tonight. What about the relationship between the Hebrew calendar and the Mayan calendar?
Okay. You have to understand the Hebrew calendar is what's called a lunar calendar. Okay, a lunar calendar is a calendar that measures time from new moon to new moon. And that's again, like a 29 and a half. 29.5 and a number of fractional numbers there per moon, and that lunar calendar that the Hebrews use. This is the year 5763, I believe, that just began this last Rosh Hashanah, and that calendar has 12 lunar months. That's called synodic lunar months. The 29 and a half day new moon to new moon is called the synodic cycle. And there's 12 of those months a year, but that only comes to 354 days. It's not a solar measure, actually. And so what happens is that every 3 years they add a 13th moon. Every 19 years they add 7 extra moons. Okay? That's just a standard synodic lunar calendar. There really isn't any difference, really, between the Hebrew lunar calendar, the Islamic lunar calendar, the Chinese lunar calendar, because all the lunar calendars measure at the synodic cycle from new moon to new moon. You think they're different, but they're not. They're different because the Hebrew calendar starts on Rosh Hashanah, the Islamic calendar starts on Muharram 1, and the Chinese calendar starts usually on the first new moon or so after the Gregorian calendar starts. But in actuality, standards of measure, they're all measuring the same moon. Okay? They're all measuring the new moon is the new moon. And so,
right.
So that's a very interesting thing. The Mayans, of course, also had that lunar measure, but the Mayans had many, many other calendars. That's just simply one of them. The interesting thing about that lunar calendar, a lot of people think that the moon is feminine. or that there's something feminine about that. But it's interesting, the societies that have lunar calendars are the most patriarchal societies in the world. The Hebrew society is very patriarchal, the Islamic society is very patriarchal, and so is the Chinese.
Yeah, that's true.
And so that's a very interesting point there, and also that those are not, they only measure half the thing. They don't measure your solar year. That means that those societies, they're not totally integrated. It's like if you measure the moon, but you don't measure the sun, okay?
Yeah.
Then you're not measuring, you're actually not really measuring the solar orbit. The Mayan calendar measures the solar orbit. The Mayan calendar had different solar calendars, had moon calendars, had different star calendars. Because they had a very, very, very sophisticated and different perspective on time. What you have to understand is that the human timing sensibility, by and large, is very primitive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
But the Mayans wasn't.
No, the Mayans wasn't. The Mayans was the most sophisticated timing sensibility that existed on the planet.
Vastly ahead of everybody else.
Vastly ahead.
Vastly. It's a huge difference.
Yeah, you can't even compare them. The Mayan point of view of the current timing systems is that they're one-sided and or primitive. As standards of measure, they just don't make it. The Gregorian calendar, the standard of measure, just doesn't make it.
Well, they have to be constantly adjusted.
Correct.
You mentioned that the Mayan had many different calendars, and also you say that consciousness is related to the kind of calendar that you use. And could it be that the different priesthoods who were responsible for these different calendars actually were living in different consciousnesses, different dimensions?
Well, I'm not too sure about that. When you say the different calendars, most of the calendars that are, as I said, that are historically being used are these lunar calendars. The Babylonians and the Egyptians developed this 12-month cycle based on the division, the 12-part division of a circle, and then applied, because the circle is 360 degrees and the solar year is 365, close but no cigar.
Yeah.
Okay? So they're always fussing around with that. The mechanical clock works perfect on that, but then the mechanical clock is not a human device, and nor is it based on any actual measure of time in nature.
Right.
Again, it's an artificial adaptation of a spatial measurement to a timing sensibility, and that can really mess you up. Because our timing sensibility, we're talking about an instinctive, native, biological sensibility, and then when you start to put a measurement of space on that, then it starts to warp it. It creates an artificial sensibility within the body, and what happens is that you begin to have a process of what's referred to as alienation from nature, your own and that of the universe.
And that is the problem,
that
as far as you
see. That is definitely the problem.
Listen, we've got a lot of questions. Let's stay with the Internet just now, and then we'll go to the phones. Here's a really interesting one. I was going to ask you this. We touched on the 144,000 in the Book of Revelation. And what is the relationship of this number to the 13-month, 28-day timing sequence?
Well, the relationship of that number to the 13-month, 28-day timing frequency, I think we go back a step, okay? To the 13 is a key factor, okay? Because the 13 is a prime number, 12 is a static number,
mm-hmm.
Okay? It creates stasis. The 13 is circular. It creates circulation. That's why when the Babylonian timing sensibility stayed at the number 12, then 13 became taboo. That's why we have the superstition. But we'll go back with that 144,000. Where that really has meaning is, I mentioned that the cycle of history measured by the Mayan long count calendar is a 5,125-year cycle consisting of 13 baktuns. Each baktun is 144,000 days.
Right.
In other words, there's 144,000 days between 1618, when the scientific revolution began, and 2012.
But it would appear that there's a Mayan calendar hidden in the Book of Revelation.
Well, it would definitely appear that there's a Mayan calendar hidden in the Book of Revelations. I think part of that is because when we talk about the Mayan calendar and the natural timing frequency, the 1320 timing frequency, that's a natural timing frequency. So anyone who's really tuned in, who's mystically absorbed in higher consciousness and whose mind is able to sail out into the cosmos, inevitably is going to come back with numbers that are very, very similar to the Mayan calendar. That's St. John of Patmos.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
That's
so,
right. And, I mean, John of Patmos obviously was the real thing.
Yeah, he was the real thing. And see, that book of Revelations is the 27th book of the New Testament. That's 27 is 3 times 9. And there's 39 books in the Old Testament. That's 3 times 13. And those numbers, 13 and 9, are very important because I mentioned the prophecy of the 13 heavens and the 9 hells. There's those
yes.
Mayan numbers again.
Right.
And the book of Revelations itself is 22 chapters. You have chapters 1 to 13, which gets you up to the big bad G7. And then chapters 14 to 22, 9 chapters there, which takes you from the 144,000 hearing the new song again up to the New Jerusalem in chapters 21 and 22, where you have the 144,000 again, the 12 by 12 cubits.
Oh, this is fabulously interesting, I have to tell you. Okay, we got to take some calls. Let's go to Don in Albany, Oregon. Hi, Don.
How you doing? Hello?
We're here.
Off we go. Okay, I don't know where we are with the phones. I'll ask for Don one more time. If he's not there, then we'll just go on, Jose. Don? No, he's gone. Okay. All righty. So, Jose, let's just keep going then. That was an absolutely awesome flight that you just went on there. And it suggests that there's a level of superconsciousness that the Maya reached, that John reached, that maybe there's a larger structure within the Bible that was known but hidden for thousands of years as it was being created. Almost must be true.
Well, Whitley, because as you just put it, there is a higher, what we call fourth dimensional consciousness has an actual mathematical order and structure to it, which according to the law of time is referred to as the synchronic order, the order in which things are measured by their happening, by their coincidence, by their happening in time together, as we would put it. And that this synchronic order has always existed, just like gravity has always existed. Like before Newton, gravity existed. It was only after Newton that we knew that it was called gravity.
Right, but
okay.
We gave it a name.
We gave it a name, and so that's the same thing with the order of synchronicity and many of the higher spiritual, mystical types of expressions that we have, such as you have in the Bible, as we have been talking about here. If you go back, you know, to somebody like Enoch, and he's interesting. He's very, very, very way far back there in the book of Genesis.
Right.
How many years did he live? He lived 365 years. Okay. That's a coded number. That means that he was the one who knew the solar orbit of 365 days. If you look at the lost books of Enoch, I'm not talking about my friend J.J. Hertok and the Keys of Enoch. I'm talking about the original lost texts of Enoch, the Ethiopic books of Enoch. You'll see that they are rife with Mayan numbers. And that's, in fact, you know, here's a really interesting thing, Whitley. You know about the Essenes?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, the Essenes, just set the stage for our listeners a little bit. What are the Essenes?
The Essenes was a group of people who defected from, they were Jewish, but they defected from the mainstream Hebrews about 150 years before Christ. And they were led by someone who is simply known as the Teacher of Righteousness. And why did they defect from the mainstream Hebrews? Because they wanted a calendar where the holidays were fixed. On the Hebrew lunar calendar, the holidays are not fixed because it's a lunar calendar. So they adopted a 13-moon, 28-day calendar. Did Jesus follow that calendar? That's a good question, Whitley.
Well, we're going to get into that and other questions when we come back with Jose Arguez. This is Whitley Strieber. It's Dreamland, and we'll be right back. And this is Whitley. We're back. We've been talking to Jose Arguez, time and the technosphere. We're going to find out what the technosphere is in a few minutes. We're going to find out what the inevitable event is. There is an event that Jose describes as the inevitable event that is at the core of this book and relates to the nature of time itself. What a journey we've been on between the Mayan calendar and the numbers of books in the Bible and the ways in which this ancient calendar, which obviously is more than only a Mayan calendar, but a deeply embedded reality in the consciousness or the superconsciousness of those who are responsible for the Bible. Wow, it is awesome stuff indeed. And I expected that the architect of the harmonic convergence would be exciting to talk to. Boy, is he ever. And on that note, I would like to remind you to get time in the technosphere. Go to unknowncountry.com, click on the store, click on tonight's Dreamland, and get it. It is really a mind blower. No other thing, nothing else to say about it. Next week, the hunt for 0 point. Nick Cook, aviation editor of the prestigious Jane's Defense Weekly, has nailed secret anti-gravity research dating back to the Nazis. We've wondered for years, was that real? Now one of the most accomplished defense journalists in the world says, yes, it was, and boy, does he offer chapter and verse. Yes, he does. This is Whitley Strieber. It's Dreamland. We'll be right back. This is Whitley Strieber. It's Dreamland. We're back with Jose Arguez. Jose, the phones are loaded, so let's go to the east of the Rockies line. George in Youngstown, Ohio.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good evening,
now,
George.
I've studied
or
the Bible.
Good morning, actually.
Well, yeah, it's almost 12 o'clock here.
Oh, right. So it's close.
Yeah. I studied the Bible very well, and I dated the whole Bible. And I also studied the Mayan people's calendar. And I know both very well, including the moon calendar. But what I want to say, the Hebrew calendar was a solar calendar, not a lunar calendar like stated there. They had a 20-year cycle, and it was... They added leap year days on the 3rd, the 6th, the 8th, the 11th, 14th, 17th, and 19th year, 15 days. And when the 20th year came up, it was 7,305 days like our present day calendar. Now the rulers ruled for time in the Bible. And Revelation 40 tells about it, 42 months. 42 months times 30 days, which every day, every month in the Bible is 30 days. 1,260 days. Are you with me?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Okay.
1,260 days, that's
yeah,
the number.
Yeah, right. 42 months. Now, they had what it said, times, and half times.
Correct.
Times 360 days, 360 plus 360 plus 180 days equals 1,260
correct.
Days.
Correct.
Rulers ruled for time. But the people counted from Abraham on, counted their lifetime. They had a year that began in the spring, and the year that began in the fall.
George, I want to ask you a question.
Yes.
Do you have a question?
Yes. Would you say 2012? Now, I'm just saying that it is a solar calendar. I'm coming out with a book, almost done. It is solar calendar. But, all right, the Mayan people said 2012. Do you know why 2012 is an important date?
Yeah, that's because that's the end of the 13 Bakhtun count. That's the end of the cycle of history. That's the winter solstice of 2012, and that's the point at which that we will be, the ecliptic of the Earth will be lined up with the galactic center, and that will terminate this whole cycle of history, which is really, from the Mayan point of view, as a big, big testing point, and we're now in the point of the apocalypse and the judgment day, and then that's it. The judgment's given, and either we pass the test or we don't.
Okay. Let's go to west of the Rockies, Betty in Utah. Hi, Betty.
Yes. I was wanting to say tomorrow is a big hurricane that's heading for the Yucatan Peninsula, and I'm wondering if possibly that might have something to do with the calendar, if there's something special that we might look forward to that. It says, you said to watch for tomorrow, something special may happen.
Well, I said that, and yeah. But that's not, it's really not, it's just a coincidence, perhaps, that Jose, who is an expert on the Mayan calendar, is on the air with us on the day when another calendar, or another calendrical system predicts a big change tomorrow. So I really am answering that question, but Jose, if you'd like to comment on it, please do.
Yeah, well, yeah, it is the equinox tomorrow, and we have just begun this last week. We just began the Jewish New Year, and we have very interesting events happening in Ramallah right now with Mr. Arafat absolutely under siege, and Sharon refuses to stop the siege, and Arafat refuses to surrender. I think that we may have some very interesting developments by tomorrow that will have a very, very strong effect on the rest of the affairs of the Earth in a very unpredictable way. And I think that the hurricane hitting the Yucatan tomorrow is what we call one of those synchronic points, okay, mm-hmm. in time where you have one event in the old world and another event in the new world, which are signaling a further deepening of the world crisis that is now occurring.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Alicia in Atlanta. Hi, Alicia. This is a first-time caller line.
Hello, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm fantastic. I have a question that relates to, as the gentleman was speaking of, the Bible and the number of books in the Bible and the significance of it. How does the lost books of the Bible, what's the significance of those? You made mention to one of the books, Enoch. Speak to that.
Of which books in the Bible?
The lost books.
Oh, the lost books, the ones that aren't in the Bible.
Yes.
Yeah. That's interesting. It's interesting, but two things. One, that the number of books in the Bible is the number that they are, 39 and 27. That's 66, okay, which is a fractal of the 666 number. That's a fractal of that number. So someone selected it to be that like that, okay? That's one thing that's interesting. The other thing is that there are lost books that were so-called lost books that were not included in the Bible. And it's interesting, well, why weren't they included in the Bible? If you look at the lost books of Enoch, for instance, those are tremendously fascinating, and they have lots of information that not contrary to, but that would supersede the orthodox information that's in the Bible. They give a whole other slant on interpretation of reality. And
that's,
I think,
interesting,
maybe,
because are they authentic, or just a decision was made at some point to take them out because they kind of have a different cosmology?
Yeah, see, I think it's more like, more on that point that the, because who knows what's authentic?
Right.
As far as
the, well, I mean that they were written, actually written during the biblical era.
Yeah, they were. These were written during that era, and it's an interesting question of why some of the material was not included.
Yeah.
In the Bible, and I think it's because, as you said, it seems like it's bringing in a somewhat different cosmology. Like the Lost Books of Enoch, the ones that I'm referring to, the Ethiopic Books of Enoch, have a radically different cosmology that is very much based on the number seven.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Let's stay with the phones. Let's go to the wild card line, Dorothy in Melbourne, Florida. Hi, Dorothy.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm so glad to be in touch with you.
Well, I'm glad to be in touch with you, Dorothy. You've got
a
great
you.
Voice.
I have two questions for Jose.
Okay.
Am I speaking to
you? You are yes. Speaking to me, Dorothy.
Okay. On the 144,000, I've often read about that there is will be a mark on their forehead.
That I don't know. That they are the ones who do not get the mark on the forehead. They are the ones who are spared that.
Well, it says, do not touch the ones with the mark on their forehead.
Yeah, but the 144,000 are the elect. They're the ones without the mark.
Yes.
Oh, they do not have
they
the mark.
They do not have the mark, correct.
Well, that's so, interesting.
Yeah.
And the number seven that you bring up?
Yes.
I've often wondered about my name. The first name and the last name both have the numbers. Both are seven letters.
Yeah, well.
Does that have any meaning?
Well, the number seven is probably the most mystical number that there is. In the Mayan cosmology of number, you have, you're dealing with a cosmology based on the number 13. And if you count to 13, you count 1 to 6 and 8 to 13. There's 6 numbers on one side, 1 to 6, and 6 numbers, 8 to 13, and 7 is in the middle. You compare number 1 with number 13, and that's 14. Number 2 and number 12, that's 14. All the way up to number 6 and number 8, and that's 14. But the number 7 stands alone.
It's also the number of a life octave and the number of a musical octave, of a full octave of music
yes.
as well.
So it's probably the most significant number that there is.
Okay, well, let's go now to east of the Rockies, Philip in Norfolk, Virginia. Hi, Philip.
Greetings to you all. Peace to you all there, Whitley, and all your listeners, in the name of Yahushua.
Okay.
While you're on the subject of 13, the scriptures teach that 13 is... relates to witchcraft. So,
where does it say that? I'm curious.
Well, there was, that's what it teaches, and it is a significant number in the occult.
Yeah, but, you know, I know the scriptures pretty well, and I'm not able to remember, I'm not quite able to remember where this is exactly. Where is it? Give me chapter
and just like the number seven. You know, every number has...
No, wait a minute, let's go back to this.
11, 12, there were...
You're not computing here, because I think we need... You say that this particular number is associated with witchcraft in the Bible, and I've been a student of the Bible for a long time, and I'm not remembering where, and please help me remember where.
Would you agree that 13 is a strong number in the occult?
I'm still asking a basic question. And I'm not getting an answer, because apparently the answer's not there. I think that my forgetting that chapter and verse is because the chapter and verse isn't there. Is that correct? Okay. Well, we've dealt with him, I think.
Yes.
Jose. Let's go on to the next caller.
Good.
I mean, if you're going to chapter and verse, you're going to tell me things are in the Bible, you better know that I am a student of the Bible, and I'm going to notice if it ain't there. Okay, where are we? Let's go to the first-time caller line, Jason in Massachusetts. Hi, Jason.
Hi. I'm calling for a question for Jose.
Yes.
I've read your second book, Earth Ascending, and I think your whole Planet Art Network theory is really fascinating. it's sort of, you know, inspiring for the whole concept of, like, a, you know, global consciousness actually being capable. And I was wondering if you could, like, further explain that somehow.
What, the Planet Art Network?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the Planet Art Network actually, at this point, is a very, very large, actual, real network of people in virtually every part of the world. And they are furthering the planetary global consciousness through the promotion of the value of time as art, and that, which is to replace the value of time as money, and that the instrument that the people in the Planet Art Network are utilizing to attain the new higher consciousness is the 13 moon 28 day calendar. If you want to know more about the Planet Art Network, you should go to www.tortuga.com. Tortuga, TORTUGA.com. Okay? It's a real thing. It's happening.
Oh, that's right. And I should have, I'm remiss, Jose, in not mentioning your website before. This website, which I am literally on right now as we speak, you can go to it also from by going to Tonight's Dreamland and clicking on the link. It's right there, and it's tortuga.com. And on tortuga.com, among other things, you will find a tutorial that will enable you to go right to where we are today and come to understand how the 13-moon 28-day calendar works. For example, we are on Electric Moon Day 2. This is moon number 3 of 13 moons, and this is the second day of that moon. And it's also September 21st in the Gregorian calendar.
That's absolutely correct. Hey, wait, what's your birthday?
June the 13th.
What year?
1945.
Okay, well, we'll get you your galactic signature in a couple minutes, okay?
Oh, great. I'd love it.
You need a galactic signature, Whitney.
I'd love a galactic signature.
Yeah, with the work that you're doing, you absolutely need your galactic signature. So we'll get this figured out for you and give it to you in a few minutes, okay?
Okay, and incidentally, that's still bothering me. The number 13 isn't necessarily associated with the occult. It's associated with a whole lot of... a lot of things.
Well,
and
you know, it's a
there's
number,
nothing in the Bible that says
no,
that.
No, there's
number,
nothing in the Bible that says that at all.
No.
And that
there's
so
some guy who's maybe a little scared because this is unusual, and he's. We have to be educated if we're going to be what we want to be in life. We have to be educated and not superstitious. It's very important.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be presenting something that I thought was riddled with a lot of negative occult nonsense. That's for sure. That's not, that wouldn't get on this radio program. Jose's a serious guy and very well-educated man, too. But listen, Jose, we need to stay with the phones because we got a lot of calls. Let's go to the west of the Rockies to Henry in Santa Rosa, California. Hi, Henry.
Hi, Whitley. Thank you. Jose, hello.
Hey.
Can I please ask you to elaborate what the, in your first in the book you wrote, The Mind Factor, that was you, correct?
Yes.
You alluded to a beam of power that Earth goes through periodically. I never understood where this beam originated, what was the source.
I know what you're talking about. You're talking.
I'll take my call off the air. Go ahead.
You're referring to what I call the galactic synchronization beam, and this galactic synchronization beam has its source at the center of the galaxy. Of our galaxy, which the Maya referred to as Hunab Ku, and that which means one giver of movement and measure, and that the measure of this beam is what we would say is 5,125 years wide, let's say, and that its purpose. These beams come out from the galaxy, and their purpose is as indicated, synchronization is to synchronize different stellar fields. Now, it's interesting that recently in my travels I spent some time in Russia and came across the work of Nikolai Kozarev, and who was with the Russian Academy of Sciences, and he also had come up with interesting studies showing that what he said, that the source of time is in the center of the stars, and time is sent out in instantaneous beams. and seem to corroborate and confirm what I was saying in the Mayan factor, and that is that the time is a factor of synchronization.
Jose, we've got to go. We have come up to the top of the hour, and callers, we will be back to you in just a couple of minutes. This is Whitley Strieber. It's Dreamland. We'll be right back. And this is Whitley Strieber. We're back. We've been talking to Jose Arguez and taking calls. Time at the Technosphere, the law of time in human affairs. For its enormous potential for the future of humanity. And we will be getting to that with Jose during the course of this next hour. It is quite an incredible book. It's the sequel to The Mayan Factor. You don't need to have read The Mayan Factor to read it, of course. But 15 years in the making, and it is really a powerful, powerful book. I'm still kind of burned about this business of the occult, where people call me up and say, well, anything they don't understand has to be the occult because some guy happens to mention the number 13. This is nothing to do whatsoever with the occult at all, okay? And anyway, I think the occult's fascinating. I've written a lot of novels about the occult, and I refuse to be scared or intimidated by the dark side. And if you read my journal entries on the last two journal entries on unknowncountry.com, you'll find out why. Because I've had this stuff come after me. But good people should never be afraid of evil. They should be careful, aware, but not afraid. There's no reason to be afraid. It wants you to be afraid because fear gives it power. And I'm sorry, but I don't have any intention of giving the dark side power. That's not what I'm here for. Time in the Technosphere, the law of time in human affairs. You can get it from unknowncountry.com. Go to the Night Streamland. Click on the store, and you can order it right there. So it's well worth having, I think. It's a whole new way of looking at where we are in time and what our relationship to time is, and this is from a guy who is telling us accurately about the way the world is changing, had a tremendous effect on the nature of our world and our lives back during the Harmonic Convergence in 1987. Awesome. And now he's saying these new things are happening, and he's to be listened to, in my opinion, for sure. Okay, we'll be back with your telephone calls and with Jose in just a couple of minutes. This is Whitley Strieber. It's Dreamland. We'll be right back. This is Whitley Strieber. It's Dreamland. We're back with Jose Arguez and your telephone calls. We've got loads of calls, and we're going to take calls for a while. And then we're going to get into some unfinished business about the inevitable event and what exactly is coming up in 2004. So let's go to, let's see, I've got my caller, direct. Okay, I think we've got East of the Rockies, Dale, I'm sorry. Wildcard line still. Mike in Port Townsend, Washington. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Thank you.
Oh, I'm glad, Mike, that I got to you. I was getting a little confused. There's a lot of calls on here, and I was sure who I took last. Well,
no,
hi.
That's all right. I get terrible reception out here in this neck of the woods, so I appreciate the connection over the phone. Now, listen, I go to an experimental college here in Washington. My buddy Will, by the way, has tuned me in on the Tortuga website. Really good place to find out information about this.
We're it's a fabulous website. It's Tortuga.com, by the way. TORTUGA.com. That's excellent, excellent stuff.
Yes, definitely visit that, folks. We've been taking some classes in, I've been taking ancient texts. He's been taking some classes in Mayan and time situations. And we're both trying to understand how to implement this into, you know, this Mayan calendar, living the life of the Mayan calendar or the natural calendar, as it were, in this Gregorian world. And so, Jose, I would hope that you would tell us what you do.
Well, what I do is I just live on the 13 moon calendar time. I live with as few technological connections as possible, to tell you the truth. I've got a phone and I've got a computer, but we don't have a television, a radio, or anything like that. And we live in a small intentional community out in the woods.
When you say intentional, what do you mean?
Well, because we intend to be living, we intend to live what we call the 1320 lifestyle.
Now, what do you do about, like, counting the day inside the individual day? Like,
we in the individual, within the day, we count the day according to what we call net. The day is called a net minute, a noospheric Earth time minute. One day is actually no more than one Earth minute, and that day is divided naturally to the time before sunrise, the time between sunrise and noon, the time from noon till sunset, and the time from sunset to midnight. And we call those are the different watches of the day. And then we organize the different watches of the day, organized by the daily kin. Today is Lunar World Bridger, and every kin has a relationship to four other kin. And
what is a kin?
A kin is one of the 260 units in the Tolkien or the harmonic module. By the way, Whitley, you are a red magnetic dragon. Congratulations. That's kin number one. You're numero uno, dude.
What does that all mean?
That means, listen, kin number one, red magnetic dragon, says, I unify in order to nurture, attracting being. I seal the input of birth with the magnetic tone of purpose. I am guided by my own power. Doubled, I am a galactic activation portal. Enter me. That's you.
Whoa.
Okay. You can handle that. You know you're a galactic activation port. You wouldn't have all those visitors, Whitley.
Something's certainly going on.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's fascinating. Thank you for telling me that, Jose.
Yeah.
I'm, go on Tortuga.com to begin to get an idea of exactly how Jose came to what he just came to, or read the book,
okay.
Time in the Technosphere. I'll get you into this, and it's well worth getting into. Well, let's stay with the phones, because we got a lot of people waiting for you, Jose. Let's go to east of the Rockies, Dale in Wellington, Kansas.
Hi, Whitley.
Hey, Dale.
Hey, how y'all are?
We're doing.
I've got a quick side note. I love your theme music so much that when my mother died on the 4th of July, we used that as a prelude in her funeral.
Oh, that's
so,
very tough.
She always thought that sounded like music that the angels would play.
Yeah.
Anyhow, what I called about was you guys were talking to somebody a while ago about the 144,000 and the mark on their forehead.
On everybody else's forehead.
Well, no, not everybody else. A lot of people are not going to take the mark of the beast. But these 144,000 come 12,000 from each of the 12 tribes of Israel, with the exception of the tribe of Dan. He's not mentioned, but all the other tribes are. There'll be 12,000 from each one, which totals 144,000, and they will be sealed or marked on their forehead by an angel. And they are not to be touched during at least the first part of the tribulation. They will be God's preachers. And Revelation's pretty clear about that.
Yeah, that's
so,
very correct. And the mark
correct.
The mark from the angel is not the same as the mark of the beast.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
I understand.
So will
that
be
confusion has been I've been saying unmarked because I meant obviously that we were talking about, you know, I was thinking in terms of the mark of the beast, but it's true that the way you put it that there will be a marking. Let me ask you this, Jose. Where are we? Are we in the time of tribulation?
We are in the time of tribulation.
How long have we been there?
The time of tribulation from the Mayan prophecies began in the year 2000, in the middle of the year 2000. And the third millennium actually began January 1st, 2001. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that it was in the very first year then of the third millennium that the inevitable event occurred, the 9/11, the September 11th, the collapse of the Twin Tower of Babel in Babylon, New York. And that marked the actual, that was the signal that we had actually entered the time of tribulation. What's going to be happening tomorrow? It looks like it's been interesting hearing the top of the news each hour, this deteriorating situation around Arafat, which it looks like tomorrow could come to a rather climactic peak. That will send off ripples that will trigger the next phase of this whole process of tribulation. According to the Mayan prophecies exist as a counterpoint to the prophecies of the Book of Revelations, and that it's like having additional information, but it's an additional information by divine command to give the human race a helping hand. And it says that the time of tribulations can be over July 26, 2004, if we make the choice. And the choice is to leave the time of the devil, which is the time of the Gregorian calendar. The Gregorian calendar is referred to as the time of the devil because it is an incorrect timing standard that has misled people into a false sense of time and has numbed them out into the true nature of time and to the divine sacred order of reality, which in combination with the mechanical clock has caused the human species to absolutely deviate from the course of nature. So we are so numbed out, it doesn't matter to us anymore how many species went extinct in the last few days. And
it was frightening to hear on the radio, on the news a few minutes ago, that bees could go extinct in parts of the United States because it's so dry.
Yes.
And, without bees, there is no real agriculture. I mean, what are you going to – you don't have anything to pollinate without
yes.
them. But, Jose, let's just go back. We were referring to the Gregorian calendar, but that's only one in a long line of calendars coming that begin with even before the Roman calendar, but the Julian calendar, is really the foundation of the Gregorian calendar, isn't it? So, isn't it a much older thing?
Yeah, the Julian calendar and the Gregorian calendar are essentially exactly the same thing.
It's an attempt to the Gregorian calendar was an attempt to balance something that was not balanced.
Yeah, but the Julian calendar, and it's a inaccurate measuring device, but they did have the leap year thing to try to keep up with what is referred to as astronomical time.
You know, and you can, by the way, folks, those of you who are writing emails, questions about this, you can go to tortuga.com and you can actually download a 13-moon calendar from there. And you can learn about it that way. And there's a tutorial about the calendar and everything. So you can learn all of this stuff. It's all available. He's got it all laid out there. Okay, go ahead.
So that Julian calendar, when the Spaniards got to Mexico and ran into the Mexican and the Mayan civilization, they found out that the calendar there was far better than their calendar, and that the Julian calendar was off by 10 days from what they thought was supposed to be spring equinox. All that notwithstanding, the Spaniards burnt everything they could find of the Mayan knowledge in 1562. The man responsible for it was pulled back to Europe, Bishop Dalanda, and after 10 years he was sent back to Yucatan. He was named the bishop, the first bishop of Izamal in Yucatan, where the books were burnt. And the same year he was sent back, Pope Gregory the 13th, to get back to that 13, was elected pope. And he made the first order of business to reform the Julian calendar to adjust it to get back the 10 days it was off. So if you went to sleep on October 5th, 1582, you woke up on October 16th, 1582. That was the Gregorian calendar reform.
Well, people must have been rather annoyed.
Yeah, they were rather annoyed. What we're proposing is far, far more benign. Okay?
In fact, what you're proposing would be great for accounting.
Yeah, it would be very great for accounting. As a matter of fact, the 13-moon, 28-day calendar was the favorite calendar of the International Chamber of Commerce. In 1921, the International Chamber of Commerce proposed to the League of Nations that we change the calendar and adopt the 13-moon, 28-day calendar. The League of Nations, this is very little known, in 1926 opened it up and said, okay, let's have a calendar reform. They get 500 entries for the calendar reform, and then in 1931 they said, okay, we got it narrowed down to three. The top contender was the 13-moon, 28-day calendar because it's obviously perfect, harmonic, perpetual. You can maintain the 52 weeks, but you have the 365th day, which is what throws the Gregorian calendar off. You don't know what day of the week it is from year to year or month to month even.
Right.
The 365th day would be no day of the week or month at all. And you have what we refer to as the day out of time. And that is, the day out of time is now celebrated all around the world. It's a great, great day of art, festival, culture, and forgiveness.
That's interesting and beautiful, Jose, the day out of time. Let's go back to the phones. We got loads of calls still waiting. Let's go to the first time caller line. Scott in Virginia Beach. Beautiful place.
Yeah, I really would like to hear what y'all have to say, but I'd like to hear some of the other stuff that your callers might say, like when he was referring to 2112. 2012. I believe that gentleman was going to say that that's probably could possibly be when the reign of heaven is ushered in.
Yes.
But anyway, one of your other callers also mentioned 13. He really got you steamed up.
Well, he got me steamed up because he was saying that it was in the Bible, and it wasn't.
But what he was getting at probably was that the number 13 has a bad significant meaning. That's all. But anyways, just like you had a caller talk about the 12 tribes. Well, he actually mentioned 13, but one of them was cut off. And that was
the one that
was cut off represented Hasatan, because that's where Judas Iscariot came from. He was of the 13th tribe, which just symbolically, it was a bad connotation to that number. But anyways, and you quoted Revelation chapter 12, and you were referring to the woman that was clothed with the sun and the moon, and the stars were under her feet. That is referring to God's ambassadors to mankind, basically, which is Israel. And that's the who the Savior, the Messiah, came through, was that she bore that man-child, and that gave us the Messiah.
Okay.
I think you got your Jose. You got a lot of good stuff, but it's a little misguided. What this is all about is the sovereignty of the universe and who owns it. And like Eliyahu said, how long do you halt between two opinions? If Yahuwah is Elohim, then serve him. If Baal is Elohim, then serve him.
And what do you say to that? Sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead, caller.
That's all I got to say. You know, like I said, you got a lot of good stuff here, but it's just misguided because the Mayans are not, they do not testify of the scriptures in reference to the Messiah. So therefore, the scriptures teach us that if you do not come in that name, then you're not to receive them.
You have to stop, caller, because we're coming up on the bottom of the hour in just a second, and I want to give Jose a chance to respond to you before we do that. So I'm sorry. Well, okay. Jose, we'll take it across the bottom of the hour, and you can respond to the caller across the bottom of the hour. This is Whitley Strieber. It's Dreamland, and we'll be right back.
We continue now with Dreamland on Premier Radio Networks.
And this is Whitley Strieber. It is Dreamland, and I'm kind of curious about something. The Bible seems to be getting filled with things that aren't in it tonight. There's nothing in the Bible about what Judas Iscariot's tribe was. And, I just wish if people are going to bring up the the Bible, that we keep to what's actually there rather than what we believe to be there, or by some sort of form of overinterpretation have decided might be there. Listener sent me a very interesting website that he's created. It's a simple little website. It's angelfire.com/retro/calendar/gods.html. On it, there are three images, ancient images of Oannes, of a Mayan god, and of a Sumerian god, all carrying an object, the same thing, clearly. It's clearly the same thing in all three pictures. And he simply asks the very good question, what's going on here? If these people in these different times, and certainly one can understand Oannes, the Babylonian figure, and the Sumerian god carrying the same thing, but how is it that the Mayans got into this picture? With their god carrying the same object. It looks like a little purse or something. It's fascinating. You know, we don't know exactly what our past is all about. We just don't understand it. But we're beginning to get a clearer and clearer idea of what the future is. I think that there's a lot of change taking place right now. That things are really hotting up in the Mideast. I think it could blow at any time, frankly. Saddam Hussein really threw down the gauntlet. He threw down the gauntlet. He said, basically, I'm going back on the promise that I just made a few days ago. No inspectors are going to get anywhere. They're not going to be allowed free access. And to my mind, that means that we are going to war with Iraq. That's what it means, in my opinion. Whether we have the UN with us or not. At the same time, what is happening in Israel and in Palestine is basically a very fascinating thing. The Palestinian parliament has essentially rejected Yasser Arafat and made his entire cabinet resign because the parliament speaks on behalf of moderation and sees a way to peace. And now the Israeli government has reduced Arafat to apparently just a single, almost just a part of one building, and the rest of his compound is completely destroyed. So what that all means, I don't know. It's a mystery wrapped in an enigma, but an awful lot is happening right now. And I think Jose is right to be pointing that out. His book, Time in the Technosphere, The Law of Time and Human Affairs, a fascinating book indeed. His website, tortuga.com, the website of his organization, rather, where you can learn about his ideas about calendars. And they are fascinating that somebody with, who you think, talking about calendars, I mean, it's a kind of esoteric subject, but it goes right to the heart of human consciousness. Wow. Fascinating. Okay, we're going to take a couple more calls when we come back, and then Jose and I are going to talk this thing out a little bit more. This is Whitley Strieber. It's Dreamland. We'll be right back. This is Whitley Strieber. It's Dreamland. We're back. We're talking to Jose Arguelles, and we're taking calls. We've got a few more calls I want to take, and then I just am going to spend the rest of the time talking to Jose, because we've got a little bit of unfinished business here. Let's go to west of the Rockies, Jack in Sebastopol, California. Hi,
hello.
Jack.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, good.
Hi there. First of all, when is the next 366?
When is the next what?
365th day.
The day out of time is correlated to the Gregorian calendar, July 25th date.
July 25th of next year.
Yeah, next year. That's the next day out of time. The day out of time is always celebrated on that day.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
And
next,
yeah.
Is What about the legend of Viracocha, Quetzalcoatl, and connection to Kennewick Man and Spirit Lake Man? From what I know, about 13,000 years ago, after the flood, some sort of tribe of light-skinned and light-haired people traveled up through South America teaching peace and astronomy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I know a little bit about that. That's definitely the legend of Viracocha, and you'll find some elements of that still in the ancient city of Tiwanaku in Bolivia, and there does seem to be some connection also with the legends of Quetzalcoatl, which go back to very great antiquity in Mexico. So, yeah, there's definitely a connection there, and there are many, many mysteries of the New World peoples that are just starting to come to the surface as far as are getting answers to those go.
Okay, well, thanks very much, caller. Let's go to the wild card line to Ron in Wichita, Kansas. Hi, Ron.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Certainly enjoying your show. I just got onto the station here by accident. I'm just pretty amazed at the whole thing. And I had a question for Jose and then a comment. Back in the 70s when I was a young man, I remember a prophecy, and that prophecy was that out of Texas would come the Antichrist.
Where'd you hear that?
Well, it's been so many years, I can't remember exactly. I was, at the time, I was involved in the Baha'i faith, and which is a modern movement, in Iran.
Yeah.
And I'd forgotten about it, and then of course when George Bush Senior went to Iraq in the war and all the details that went with that and how they, Saddam was sort of given the green light to go into Kuwait, and then of course we went in there and, did what we did. It kind of that came to me in my memory, and I just wondered if Jose had ever heard of this, and if you could respond to that. And I also have a comment I want to make about all this too, if I can.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that particular thing about the Antichrist coming out of Texas, but I do think it's very interesting the comments that you make about George Bush, the father, and George Bush, the son, and they obviously have a big karmic thing with Mr. Hussein. And
yeah, they sure do.
And I've actually researched that on the Dream Spells, matter of fact, and they're all very close together. In their positions in the synchronic map of time, and it looks like in particular that George Bush, both Junior and Senior, as well as Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden, are all very close together, and they obviously all have some strange karmic connection, let's just put it that way, and that seems to be very much involved with this final play of the Armageddon script, which seems to be just now surfacing.
Well, the Bush family, I have to say, in defense of both the Bushes and Texas, they don't seem at all sinister. I have, being from South Texas, I have lots of mutual friends with them. And in fact, a friend of mine, Kinky Friedman, another writer, just spent the night in the White House a couple of weeks ago, and he's pretty much of a lefty, I think, but the Bushes are not particularly ideological in terms of their friends. And when he went to the White House with Bill Clinton, he gave Clinton a Cuban cigar. Of course, it's supposed to be highly illegal, and it was a big joke at the time. Bush heard about this, and when Kinky went to the White House to meet George, George gave him a Cuban cigar. So it's a lot of humor. I mean, it's not, there's no sense of anyone being an antichrist or anything like that in that family. They're just very normal-seeming people. I mean, I don't get the feeling of the presence of any of these terrible conspiracies or anything that people talk about at all. They really, if they weren't associated with the White House, they would be such ordinary Texans. Senior came here back in the when my dad was still operating in the oil business. I remember him even being talked about a little bit back in those days as he got more and more prominent in the field before he was president. But they're just Texans. They're not the Antichrist, I hope. And I certainly hope it wasn't LBJ either. He was another one that was considered a big conspirator, but was just a very ordinary, very smart, but extremely country Texan. He's a very country Texan from the Hill Country. Okay, I'm sorry to go on like that. Jose, I want to get on now and talk a little bit about the great calendar change of 2004. You talk considerably about that in time and the technosphere. And can you give us a little bit of an idea of what that is and what you expect to happen if we don't make the change of calendar, which saying we should? If we do not, then what happens?
Yeah, let's start with that point there. Right now, whether you're in China or even in most of the Islamic world, not all of it, but much of it that's still doing business in the West, you're on the Gregorian calendar time. In fact, the world is on the Gregorian calendar time. That is the world standard civil calendar. This calendar is a flawed instrument of measure. As I spoke of it, as a macro programming device. Any calendar is a macro programming device. All the social mores, habits, customs of the people are programmed into the calendar. You can't think of life in America without July 4th. You can't think of it without Christmas.
No.
And those are all, you take the calendar away and what do you have? But the calendar is an arbitrary device in that regard. This calendar is programmed for greater and greater havoc and chaos and destruction because it is an incorrect standard of measure. It runs actually on 28-year cycles, and a 28-year cycle definitively began in 1945 with Hiroshima, in 1973 with the dedication of the Twin Towers, in 2001 with the destruction of the Twin Towers. This was the inevitable event. It was inevitable because the karmic forces and the circumstances of the pressure of human artificial civilization against the rest of the living texture of the Earth, the biosphere, had come to a point of rupture, and that point broke. This also then was in time with prophetic timing, the time of the tribulation, of the apocalypse that we have now entered. According to the Mayan prophecies, which totally affirm all the Book of Revelations and all the Christian prophecies, there's not any argument between them. It's just that the Mayan prophecies have supplementary information. It says that the kingdom of heaven is ours, if we are able to exit from the devil's time, the artificial time, the mechanical time, the devil's time of the Gregorian calendar, and that there's a prophetic moment and an opportunity to do this. We have to do this before 2012 because that's everything closes out. At that point, the cycle of history terminates. It's not the end of time. A new cycle will begin, but it will be a new evolutionary cycle. We're just going through the final purification and cleansing right now. But to make it to the 2012 as a whole being, we have to return to being in the cycles of nature, living in the cycles of nature before then. And the last possible time to make that transit is in the 2004, July 25th and July 26th, 2004. And the ticket is the 13-moon, 28-day calendar, which is a harmonic, perpetual calendar. There's no chaos in that calendar. The Gregorian calendar program is programmed for chaos and apocalypse. You cannot get a resolution of a measure of harmony in that timing standard. And that programs the whole unconscious, so it's impossible to ever get an ultimate peace. We had a century of total war, and now we're looking at a millennium of total war. If we don't change the timing standard, the millennium of total war will end probably within 28 years, if not sooner. So the point is that we now have the opportunity to return to living according to a natural standard, a standard that is a harmonic standard that will help place the human race back in harmony with itself and with the forces and the cycles of nature and the universe. And that's, the, as I said, the 13-moon, 28-day calendar. We've been working for a number of years between the harmonic convergence and the publication of this book precisely with this whole point, the discovery of the law of time. The law is a new discovery. It says that there is a law of time, just like there is a law of gravity or a theory of relativity. There is a law of time, and the law of time says that time is the natural factor of synchronization. Everything in the universe is synchronized. When you look at the moon, it doesn't spread into two times. It stays where it is. Everything is synchronized in time. This is the real nature of time, is to synchronize things. If we actually were living in natural time outside of the linear artificial time that we're living in, we would be living in greater and greater synchronization, and our minds would enter into greater and greater synchronicity. This would radically change the nature of our civilization.
Now, how would that make us feel? What would it be like?
Well, it would be like how you feel when it's Christmas morning. You know, you feel like it's your birthday. It's when
you feel
when
better.
You feel better. You feel definitely better. You feel that you are in tune with things, that you're not always trying to catch up with things, that you're not always feeling like you're missing time, that, that suddenly you just get into something good and then, you know, the commercial happens, okay? So it's like living in that life where that doesn't happen, where you actually are living a natural, harmonious life where your body and your mind are becoming synchronized. You know, we have we live in a very aphasic, dyssynchronous society. It's because we live by one timing standard, which is irrational and illogical and is not a measure, and another standard combined with that, which is mechanical and inhumane and totally precise. So you have people, you know, having to get to work on time, and at the same time, when they get frustrated with it, taking a gun out and shooting the people they don't like. And those are the two aspects of this time that we live in. We created this living hell for ourselves, and we feel bound to it. All of our institutions are bound in it. So in that way, it is the apocalypse. To get out of this time is apocalyptic. Apocalypse means to stand naked, to stand revealed, to strip down. And so we have to strip down and then get natural. And that's what this is about. And I would like to add that this has been prepared for over the last 10 to 15 years, and we have a very, very large movement around the planet. Basically, it's a grassroots movement, a popular movement. We have been to the Vatican. We have been to the United Nations. We have sent our appeals to many different governments. As you can imagine.
Are you getting any response?
It's generally the last thing they want to hear. But I will say one thing. Kofi Annan likes us.
Well, that's a help. But the fact of the matter is, we aren't going to make this calendar change.
Well, you may think we're not going to make this calendar change.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, that, of course, is very often the response that we get that it couldn't happen. They tried it in the 1930s, they say, and it didn't happen then. So how could it possibly happen now? Well, I think that what you have to be looking at is that this is going to become an increasing alternative option, especially as the events beginning tomorrow and over the next several months occur. People are going to be saying, hey, there got to be a better answer. There is another answer. We got to get out of here alive, Whitley. And
okay, Jose, this is where also we got to get out of here, alive or not, and we are very much alive. And I would like to thank Jose Arguez for spending a wonderful, fascinating evening with us, Time and the Technosphere, the Law of Time and Human Affairs. Don't miss it, and don't miss his website, tortuga.com. This is Whitley Strieber. It's Dreamland. We'll be talking to you again next week.